you carry on for those that you care about and honor them in your life. So find something that fuels you to make the world a better place or to be a better human. That's why I still try and take care of myself and be a positive person. And especially even coming to my family, my kids, I want to be as healthy and around to help them, to aid them, to be there for their questions and answers or support them as long as I possibly can. I know I'm not going to be able to be here forever, but I want to do the best I can. And when you do the best you can, you'll be pleasantly surprised at how far you can go sometimes and the difference that it makes.
Hey guys, if you missed out on the last conference in Nashville, Tennessee, you don't want to miss out on the next one. It's April 28th through May 3rd, Orlando, Florida, the Gaylord Palms Resort and Convention Center. You made a mistake missing the last one. You don't want that to happen again on this one. 5 days of some of the best training you're ever going to experience packed into one event. We have an early bird special right now, $50 off. Use 24 early bird on our website, streetcop.com. Look for the conference, click the link, register today. If you want to get significantly better at this profession in 5 days, don't dare miss out on the 2024 Street Cop Conference.
111.
Hey guys, welcome to this episode of the Street Cop Training Podcast. I'm your host, founder and CEO of Street Cop Training. My name is Dennis Bonino, and we're just going to fucking wing this thing today, as I typically usually do. People don't realize that. I think we should do a video on behind the scenes here at the podcast and how fast we just get into it. And I really think there's something special about not talking about what we're going to get into before we get into it. So with that being said, I want to introduce today's guest, Daniel Fielding. And Dan's got a crazy background, Green Beret, Special Forces, military, all that cool shit. And so instead of me doing a service to you, why don't you do a service to yourself and tell us who you are and about your life?
Okay. My name is Daniel Fielding. As Dennis said, I'm a former Special Forces soldier. I was a 18 Charlie, or I was the engineer on my team. So I was responsible for demolitions, explosives, also supplies. And before that, I was just a regular guy for a while, working in a blue collar job with my dad, building houses. Got my real estate license, was going to continue doing that after I graduated college. And then 9/11 happened. And I got a spark in me that I was like, I need to do something and I need to give back on another level. I wanted to support the troops really bad. And I figured the best way to support them would be to enlist. So I did my research, figured out what I wanted to do, and I wanted to be a Green Beret. So I did that for a few years and got out. And then I was a DOD contractor with the Department of Defense for 12 additional years. So I have about 17 years total in the special operations community. And currently now I do executive protection or security. I'm head of security for Kid Rock. So yeah, it's been quite an interesting life.
Yeah, I fucking bet that's pretty cool. You're hanging out at the White House now?
Well, I have met Trump more than once. And I got a
couple. No, I mean like the White House that like Kid Rock built in the Nashville area that apparently looks just like the White House.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I'm there all the time. I was actually just there a little while ago. But yeah.
That's awesome, man.
That's a regular for me. Yeah, the Southern White House, as we call it.
Yeah, dude, I've heard some interesting stuff about his pad and like that it's just this most breathtaking thing. And you know, you ever meet Justin Daniels? He's AKA Officer Daniels on social media.
Not that I recall, no, sir.
Okay, so he's been there. He's had hung out there, and he's like, it's fucking nuts, dude. The fucking place is crazy. Is it crazy?
Oh, it's absolutely crazy. I mean, it's everything you would expect and then more. I mean, it's just, it's insane. Everything is over the top, Kid Rock style, but classy, but country, but old school, antiques, like, guns hanging on the wall, taxidermy. There's a bowling alley. Like it's,
yeah, yeah.
It's incredible.
What kind of guy is he?
He's an amazing guy. Great American. I wouldn't work for him otherwise. I've actually known him 15 years now. And we met in 2008 in the Bahamas, right after I got off active duty. And it all started off with just giving each other gratitude. It was my birthday the year before. It was my birthday. I was in Afghanistan, literally running missions on my birthday and whatnot. So this year I got out, or the following year I had got out, and I went down to the Bahamas and looking to just have a good time and celebrate. And I hear all this music playing on the beach. So I'm like, oh, there's a bar over there or some club or something. Well, I walk over. Who is it? It's Kid Rock in his private cabana, rocking tunes and get all this music playing. And I'm like, man, you know what? I got to go up and just say thank you for all you do to support the troops. And I go up there. I say, thank you. He's like, oh, are you in? I'm like, actually, I just got off active duty. And he's like, well, thank you for your service. What brings you down here? And I'm like, oh, it's my birthday. You know, and last year I was in Afghanistan. He's like, what? It's your birthday. Let me buy you a drink. Next thing you know, we're hanging out a little bit. And he's like, hey, you got dinner plans? You want to go to dinner? And then we go to the casino and we party until the sun comes up. And I'm leaving his private penthouse now. It's like, I don't know, 6:30, 7 in the morning. The sun's up. And I'm telling him, thank you once again. I got to actually party like a rock star. Everybody says that, like, oh, I'm going to party like a rock star tonight. Like, I got to do it. I really appreciate it. He shakes my hand, then looks me right in the eye and goes, do it again tomorrow? And I'm like, well, what? What do you mean? He goes, I got that same cabana. Come on by. We'll do it all over again. And I was blown away. Well, it turned into a three-day thing. And on the last day, we're leaving the casino. Some drunk guy, you know, it's late at night. And he starts acting a fool and mouthing off. And at this point, I'm like, all right, is this guy trying to cause trouble, maybe get a lawsuit or whatnot? And I'm not an employee. I'm just a fellow patron in the Bahamas. I'm like, I'm stepping in. He's been a great host. So I'm like, Bob, that's Kid Rock's name. I'm like, Bob, get in the limo. I got this. So I kind of grabbed the guy and I'm like, look, you don't want to do this. You need to get out of here now or it's going to go bad. And the guy's like, all right, man, I'm good. You know, you get that. I'm done, you know. And he turned around, walked away. I get in the limo. Bob looks at me and goes, that was pretty good. You got a job? And no kidding, he offered me a job. And for a couple of years, I worked for him. And then we maintained a friendship because I was doing DOD contract work as well, training troops with Navy SEALs, Green Berets, MARSOC, and whatnot. And I just started doing that full time. We were on good terms. I recently, a couple of years ago, moved to Nashville, where he now lives, as you know, and we were hanging out and he was like, you know, I could use you again. We got history and I trust you. You want to come back on the Kid Rock train? And I talked to my wife and she was okay with it. And here I am again. I'm now his head of security and personal bodyguard and take care of whatever needs to be taken care of.
Dude, that's so fucking cool, right?
Yeah, it's pretty fucking cool.
It's a great story, dude. Let me go back a little bit. I mean, we're not going all the way back to the initial conversation. We're going to start at, and then we'll go a little further back. You're in the Bahamas day one, having an all-nighter with Kid Rock, right? So what are you thinking during that moment of like, how the fuck did I end up like this, right? Tell me about that moment. Like, can you go back to that? I know you're probably drinking, right? So that's fine. But how do you go back? Yeah. What were you thinking in that moment? Like, I'm rolling around this place with Kid Rock.
I was just blown away. Like, is this real? You know, especially I was flashing back to a year before, you know, when I was in Afghanistan and do it like how did it? So what I did is I made a video on my phone and I sent it to my old teammates and they're like, are you fucking kidding me? Are you kidding me? They were so pissed. I mean, they were happy, but they're like, this is bullshit. You get out and now you're hanging out with Kid Rock in the Bahamas and we're still like having to do this and do that. And, you know, so it was funny, but they were all happy for me. Actually, quite a few of them have now gotten to meet and hang out with Rock as well, because he's just a very inclusive person. If you're a good person, he is all about hanging out and helping other good people do good things. He's a positive person. You know, he gets a bad rap a lot as a badass, and he is a badass. Don't get me wrong, but he likes to surround himself with good people. Even as a saying that I talk about in my book, you know, you find good people, you keep them close. So that's kind of how we've hit it off and related in so many ways and have our friendship / you know, employment relationship.
Now, at first, I imagine, I don't like this whole podcast about your relationship with Kid Rock, but we've got to explore some of this stuff because I got to.
No, absolutely. We get time.
Try to put myself in your shoes of, I imagine at first you're starstruck. And so at what point does that starstruckness start to rescind a little bit and you start to see him for who he is and start getting comfortable in those 3 days you're hanging out with him? Like, oh my God, this guy's like really becoming a friend of mine, which is sometimes pretty fucking wild. And I'll even add to that when you're done answering this question.
So the weird thing was for me at first, it was like, oh my God, it's Kid Rock. You know, I didn't even tell him I was a Green Beret in the beginning. You know, he got that out of me later. Like, you're absolutely right. There was drinks involved and we were having a good time and celebrating, but he was just really genuine. I mean, he was even there with his kid. So like, we didn't really party and go to the casino hard until his son had gone to bed. Like, he went to the Atlantis Resort because they have all the water slides and all that. Like, he's very much a family man. You know, his friends and family are the utmost important to him and his country. I mean, he absolutely loves our country and believes in the Constitution, our freedoms, and just is a great American. But when he just kind of started, hey, call me Bob, and just talking and hanging out and giving and his gratitude. That's one of the things I read people. And I mean, cops know, you read people's demeanor and body language. Like, his body language was just genuine and real. And the way he talked to me, he didn't talk down to me. He was talking like we're talking now. So that's when I really began to notice that, wow, this is different. Because now I've met a lot of different celebrities and a lot of different people and power players and billionaires. And you can actually notice the ones that are still grounded and the ones that aren't, just by the way they conduct themselves and their mannerisms.
Human connection is a very powerful thing. And so, oddly enough, we're able to create a lot of human connection often, as nuts as this may sound, via Zoom like we're doing right now. And it happens a lot. And I think when people are very well-grounded human beings, they can connect with a lot of people who are matching with their energy and the vibrations that they're giving off, no question about it. And the reason I asked you that question to begin with was because I think at some point in my life, like anybody else, would become starstruck. And so this might sound a little weird, but because I've met so many people who have some kind of status, quote unquote, celebrity, I don't know how you're going to classify them, but well-known people. And the reason I kind of asked you that question is I you know, have now come to a point in my life where I really don't get starstruck. There's only one person in this world who fucks me up every time I happen to run into him and across him. And it's probably the fifth or sixth time that I've spent time with him. And that's Gary Vaynerchuk. Fucks me up. Right? I just can't. The dude has changed my life so significantly. You know, what I have learned is that outside of all the hype, these are human beings. They're just people like you and I.
Absolutely.
What can you tell people about that, knowing all these celebrities and meeting all the celebrities and knowing Bob?
Well, I can tell you, genuine relationships between people, when it's real, it's real. And you can cut through the bullshit. And you can tell by their mindset a lot, how they're interacting, what they're doing, what they're thinking. Are they talking down to you? Are they whining and bitching about the world? Or are they being positive or trying to lift someone up? That's one of the things, like you mentioned Gary. That's the great thing about Gary. He's like, fuck everybody else. You do you. He's trying to lift you up to be your own person. Bob's same way with me. He knew I already had written the book, but he's like, how come you don't have an audio book? Dan, what the fuck are you waiting for? And I'm like, well, studio time's expensive. And he looks at me, he's like, really? You don't know anybody with a studio? And I'm like, well, I'm not just going to ask, you know, that's not, you know, friends don't try. I'm not trying to take advantage of you and your studio. He's like, no, fuck that. He goes, you use my studio all you want. As a matter of fact, I'll teach you how to use it. So we spend an afternoon after work one day, him and I, he's showing me Pro Tunes and like, we're going through all that. And this is how you record. These are the different tracks. Gave me a course on it. I'm taking notes. And then
from Kid Rock.
Yeah. From Kid. Exactly. Like, you have your day, so much stuff going on, but he's genuinely trying to help and wants the best for me and knows who I am as a person. Like, I know who he is as a person. That's kind of what makes it special too. But yeah, I'm in there and I recorded my whole audiobook in his studio after hours. You know, I was there till 12:30 at night or whenever I could when the studio was open. And he's like, have at it, you know, get the keys and get in and out, codes or whatever. And it's just amazing. And that's one of the things you really realize with the personal relationships of people. A lot of successful people get demonized, or rich people for that matter, get demonized. And they don't understand the work that they do and the effort they put in. And anyone that really is successful doesn't like treat other people badly. They're not an asshole. If you're a fucking asshole, people don't want to work with you. You know, that's why I think a lot of bands or people like one hit wonders, you have this overnight success and then you fade away. Anybody that lasts in business or doing anything, they're treating people right. And they're actually lifting people up, because if they weren't, nobody would do business with them. No one would want to work with them. No one would want to hang out with them. No one would idolize them. So that's a thing, a misconception I think a lot of regular people have, is that, oh, rich people are a bunch of greedy assholes. No, I've seen people give away $40,000, $7,000 tip to just a waiter because they were a good waiter. I mean, doing things, changing people's lives,
right,
secretly, yep, anonymously. Like, and this isn't just Kid Rock. I mean, I've witnessed him do things, but I'm talking other people in circles that I've been blessed to be around. And that's a theme. And it clicked on me like, wow, this is a mindset that these people share. Number one is they own their life. Like Gary Vee, he tries to teach people, and you've talked about, like, it's your fucking life. Mm-hmm. Do what you want and go that path. Who cares what other people say? Haters are going to hate. You're not going to please everybody. Do your thing. Go after your goals, your dreams, and your success. And that's part of what I am trying to do and teaching people, which has been an amazing success. I did not expect to be able to help as many people as I have. And that's where I've talked. My maturity in myself has been that I've realized absolutely the pen is mightier than the sword. After 9/11, I wanted to go shoot the bad guys in the face, kick in doors, and stop terrorism and save, protect people and help people. Well, my book is able to reach so many more people across different continents all at the same time and doing things. And that to me is just lit a fire in wanting to help get out there more and stop people from having negative mindsets and being a victim. This victim snowflake shit that's going on right now, like, oh, I can't, or oh, the system's against me. Bullshit. The American dream is still out there. You want to do something, go make it happen. Nobody's going to stop you but you. Yes, there's going to be bumps in the road, but suck it up and drive on.
There's something that I reply to people when they ask me about, you know, why did I want to go down the road of taking on this task of creating this police training company, and one that clearly has a real shot at really changing how the whole fucking thing's done. And so I don't think anybody would argue, even my quote unquote people that may consider themselves my enemies, because they're not my enemies. In my mind, I'm their enemy, but they're not my enemies. And I don't believe they're my competition either. But I think if you really got to the core of it, they'd say, yeah, if anybody's got a shot at doing this thing, it's probably these guys. And so we do with good morals and values and a lot of humility. And you know, I'm from New Jersey. I curse. I'm a pretty in shape dude. So I probably, and I have a mohawk, right? So I come off this real, I don't know, at times like overwhelming personality. But I think one thing that I've been able to do well is to really show that I'm more than what you think I am on the surface. And I'm a real human being and a real good one. And that's how I pride myself. And so people would say to me, like, you know, what made you want to do police, you know, street cop training and police training? And I, same thing, dude. I realized I was a cop on the road and I thought I was having a lot of impact in the world because I was going out locking up one or two or three bad guys a day. And then I was field training people. And then I was, those guys were going out and girls and locking up one or two, three bad guys. I'm like, wow, that's cool. Then I started training the guys that I worked with. And I'm like, oh, cool. Now I have like six guys out there going to do this stuff. Like I'm talking about training besides me being their FTOs. And then I started doing classes and I'm like, oh shit. Now I'm like, every time I have a class, and they started out very small, I'm sending 10, 15, 20, 30 people back out into the road to tools they need. Now we're having real impact. And then I'm like, wait, hold on a second. Then I got more and more instructors. And so, and then, you know, just the game continues on. So I've also been asked, where do you think it's going? Well, I don't know, but I know that the path is clear. I have to continue to try to figure out, how do I reach more people? And so reverse engineering that. And then that doesn't mean just staying in the police space. I think at some point in my career, however long from now, we take what we've learned here and start improving other professions, nursing, doctors, you know, you name, plumbers, electricians. I see stuff like that on the horizon. I really do. But it's a long ways away. I'm still figuring this game out. Now, earlier you spoke about these wealthy people are the nicest people you ever met in your life. And I'm going to tell you right now, I have a very small circle of friends, and two of people who I adore tremendously are two of my wealthiest friends. And so I will tell you that they display acts of kindness and humanity tenfold over my friends who may not be as, and I'm going to say this very lightly, my acquaintances. I only have a handful of people I consider friends. I'm serious. I have relationships with people, but like acquaintances. Like, I mean, we're using the word friends. It's like love to me. You ever meet a couple who they're dating 3 weeks and they're dropping L-bombs? Like, what can that word mean to you when in 3 weeks you're now telling somebody you love them? What does that mean when you say that to your kids, that you're also ready to trade that word off to somebody you met 3 weeks earlier at a fucking bar and bang twice? And that goes on both sides of the coin. So when I hear that, it just tells me a lot about somebody. There's no way you love somebody or should even be jeopardizing that word in 3 weeks. I've seen it, right? Dropping L-bombs 3 fucking weeks. I know you're head over heels. I get it. You still got to hold on and preserve the meaning of that word because it means nothing. Now, when I hear it out of you to me, it means nothing to me. You love me, but you also love the guy you met 2 fucking weeks ago. I hear you on the phone. It's crazy.
Yeah. I think another thing that people don't realize, and not to get like biblical or anything, but it's kind of like they say, the more you give, the more you receive. Like, I did not set out to make a ton of money from this book. Yeah, I was always like, oh, it'd be great. But I've been making money. And I wrote the book to help people or to give back to people. You're doing the podcast to help people. I'm sure there's a lot of positive things that come back. So the more you give, the more you receive. I'm seeing it day in and day out. And it's amazing. So people need to understand that is a true thing. It may not happen immediately, but if you keep in that giving spirit, you'll be amazed what you get in return.
Yeah, and I hate for that to be the premise of why you should give. So my suggestion is to give with no expectation and just live a life of appreciation and breathe the air, stare at the trees, look at your kids, look at your family. Really breathe it in, man, because I got to tell you, I've had so much clarity in the past couple of days and I'm so appreciative of life right now. And it's crazy, dude, because I've had a very, very rough time in my life the past couple of years. And just that appreciation alone, it doesn't mean everything in the world. I literally got 2 emails today because at times in life, I think we feel underappreciated. And one was from a guy from a police academy who asked me if I would do a 1-hour Zoom call with the recruits. And then the other one was a guy who's runs a criminal justice division at a university and asked if I would do a 1-hour session with his students. So I don't know these guys, but it was a good reminder to me of many things. And so that maybe the thing I got most of that was people are actually really finding value out of your work. And you wouldn't be asked these things and being validated if the work you were doing was in vain. I don't get paid for the podcast. And the crazy shit is the podcast is probably one of the best. And I'm talking about like top 5 things business-wise, decisions I ever made. And I'll tell you why. You get an opportunity to go in front of people, decloak and be a human being and just show somebody at the other end of this and then your listeners as well who you are. And so for me, believing that I'm a good human being, it has opened up many, many doors for me because, for example, somebody might, like you might go back and say, hey, Bob, like I met this guy. I'm not asking you to do this. I'm just saying this is typically how it happens.
Yeah.
And like, you know, like you should really check this guy out. And so, dude, I do get messages from people who are quote unquote celebrities. And they're like, hey, man, heard about you. This is cool shit. I'm like, yo, do you guys see who fucking DM'd our Instagram account? It's crazy. So, you know, I don't show up trying to become friends with celebrities. I show up trying to be the best human being I can be and try to make a difference in people's lives and try to entertain as well.
No, absolutely. And
then that shit happens.
Be everybody's goal. You need to be the best human being you should ever be. And I was talking about the give and receive as I think a lot of people are afraid to give because they feel like I only have so much. So don't be afraid to give because stuff will come back. Yeah, don't give expectations, but have that freedom to understand like that's kind of how the world works. You know, you give more and you put yourself out there and it doesn't have to be giving financially. It can be giving of time, like you're just saying. You know, you give that time, you create a friendship. Next thing you know, someone's opening the door. Like I had an example of that happen. I was working, doing security stuff. I helped somebody. Next thing I know, they're like, hey, you want to go to this event and bring your family? I give you free tickets and you can have VIP access. I didn't ask for any of it. I was just doing my job, trying to be the best person I could be, you know, at my job and help and take care of people. Next thing you know, yeah, I didn't get a bunch of money, but I got an amazing experience with my kids. You know, we got to go to the PBR, you know, see bull riding. Like my girls were like, whoa, you know, we're up close and the dirt sweets, like dirt's flying everywhere. My son is like, when he was going, he was like, eh. When we were there, he's like, man, I kind of want to ride a bull. That looks crazy and exciting. You know? But those are the type of things when you put yourself out there and you're trying to do good work in the world, you're going to get stuff back. You don't know what it is. Don't have any expectations. But if you just do it and live that way, that energy, or, you know, some people call it the law of attraction, it's out there and it's real.
Let me validate that statement, by the way, as well, because I live my life this way. And there can be nothing more true that's been said in this podcast, that when you give, you receive. I'm just addicted to giving. And so in turn, inevitably I receive. Bro, I try to tell people and they're like, yo, thank you so much for whatever thing that I did. And I'm like, secretly, this is the most selfish shit that I'm doing, because how it made you feel, multiply that by 15 to 100, because that's how it made me feel. Because there's nothing that makes me happier than when I get to do something for somebody else. As nuts as that sounds, I'm addicted to it. I can't stop. I can't stop because I am addicted to the feeling that that person got because I was doing something that they didn't expect me to do. Oh, it's my drug, dude.
That's a special moment when you can change someone's life or change their experience or give them a life experience that they never imagined was possible and see them light up. I mean, we all know what kids do, you know, at Christmas time or birthdays, they light up when they get their presents and their gifts. They're all excited and you can see the look in their eyes. Adults don't get that much. And when you can give that to an adult, a grown person, and you can see them have that joy, it's amazing. And it's a fantastic thing. And when you do what you're meant to do in this world or something you're passionate about, you're going to do that and you're going to see that in other people. And you're absolutely right. It's going to add fuel to the fire. It's just going to make you want to do it more. And that's what the asset mindset has done for me, is I just want to share with more people now because I see how it's changed people's lives. I mean, people have lost all kinds of weight, have gone back to jobs, doing things, pursuing dreams that they never thought they could do. And I get feedback or DMs like you talk about, and I've been blown away by some of them. I mean, I had a woman message me that she's been 6 years in darkness and dealing with depression and anxiety, and my book came in and was the light that changed her life. And I'm just like, whoa, that's powerful stuff.
You know, I think people get a little confused on what it means to change somebody's life. So I'm going to give a little clarity on the back of Dan's comment. You don't need to do anything profound to move the needle just a little bit, and vice versa. Merely displaying acts of kindness and humanity. I mean, dude, I can't tell you, I fly a lot, right?
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times I literally just take people's luggage and put it in the overhead rack for them. I did it literally yesterday. I know I always go, I have four kids, so I go back to like fatherhood a lot. And a friend of mine said to me this morning, because I just checked in on her and said, you know, how are you? How are things? But she said, by the way, you absolutely win. Let me say it again. By the way, you absolutely win the award for world's most fun dad. And so I wrote to her, and I want my children to tell my grandchildren stories of how fun I was. So I do my very best to ensure that their vision of their dad is everlasting and wonderful on every level. I mean that. She goes, well, I have no doubt that you crushed that. I mean, I loved my dad, but he had me out in the front yard playing with twigs and leaves. And she wrote like, LOL. And I said, well, I don't think it matters what you had. I think it's who you had. And so my kids just get a bonus that their dad is good at making money on top of everything else. But dude, I'm going to tell you right now, I would not be any different to them if my life was different financially. And I'm not saying that I'm a wealthy person. I'm not. Maybe to some people it seems that way, but in the grand scheme of the world,
yeah, it's all relative. Yeah.
Right. And so you don't have to have $1 million to change somebody's life. You could literally change somebody's life by shoveling their snow when they weren't able to get outside and do it. You could change somebody's life by taking care of their dog for 2 days while they go on a trip and they didn't even ask you to do it. You volunteered and told them you would take care of it. And they just appreciate it so much more than you think they do.
Oh, yeah. Random acts of kindness. I'm a huge believer in that. Those little random acts of kindness. And you're also, you're showing people how they can do it themselves. Mm-hmm. You're like, wow, that was really nice. That person put luggage up for me. Or, oh, they held the door. Or one of the things I like to do randomly sometimes is I'll pay for somebody's meal. You know, I'll talk to the wait staff or wherever I'm at. And if I see them or I feel compelled and that inner guidance or voice or spirit's telling me to, hey, pay for this or pay for that, then that's what I do. And I mean, people get blown away by that. And I'll do it sometimes and just leave and they won't even know or be able to thank me. But if you've ever been on the receiving end of that, you know how special that is. Like, what? Wow. Who did what? Why? Like, oh my God, there are good people in the world. And it just, it lifts people up in the energy of random acts of kindness. And we need more of that because people are focusing too much on negativity and problems and complaining and excuses. We need to get off that stuff. And that's why I wrote The Asset Mindset, so people can have a mindset that is an asset for themselves and the world.
I'm going to say two things, and they're a tad contradictory. And the first one is this. When I was a cop, people did random acts of kindness all the time. And so early on, I can recall two instances where somebody wanted to do something very nice, and I did not accept. And that was one of the biggest mistakes I've ever made in my life, and I cannot go back and change it. All I can do is tell you not to do this. There, I was working a traffic job, and a girl came out from a bakery on a highway route. Like, it was like, you know, like one that goes through like a town. And so I was working a traffic job. She came out with a cupcake. And it might have been in the middle of the summer, so she had a cupcake, and she held it in her hand like this, and it was on a napkin, and she brought it from the bakery, and she said, hey, this is for you. And I literally responded with, I can't eat that. I'm like, it's the middle of summer. Like, I can't, like, it's the car, the sugar. I appreciate it, but I can't eat that. And the disappointing look on her face was instant regret for me. And I will never allow that to happen ever again in my life. And I suggest that you don't too. That was somebody who wanted to give you something. They wanted to see you receive it. They were so proud of that moment to come out, and you literally shut the fucking door in their face. Bad idea. And don't do it again, Dennis. The other one is my friend Jen, who I went to high school with. I hadn't seen in a long time. And I became a cop in our town. Busy town, big town. And so I've been working another traffic job. And so she went over the bridge where I live. There's a Dunkin' Donuts. She went to Dunkin' Donuts and came back. And I don't drink coffee at the time. Now I drink coffee. And so she came back down. She rolled in the window and handed me a regular cup of coffee. And I said, I don't drink coffee. Give it to somebody else. Da-da-da. And that was a mistake too. What I should have done is just take the coffee and thrown it in fucking garbage. You would have never known. But her intention was so pure. And I was lucky enough to know her. So I apologized to her. That she was like laughing. She's like, what are you apologizing for? I'm like, the kindness, the act of kindness that you showed and displayed, and for me to just literally shit on it in some sense.
Or you stifle it and they may not do it again in the future. And we don't want to do that. You don't want to stifle kindness. You want to reward it. You want it to grow. And, you know, you shut that person down that came out with the cupcake. Next time someone's out there and she's like, oh, I'll give, well, no, last time, you know, I got shut down or they didn't want it or they didn't. So you're kind of ending that behavior. And we don't want to end that behavior. We want to encourage that behavior. So I absolutely agree with you. And I have an incident similar with cake because I don't eat cake. My kids make fun of me. I don't eat candy or cake or brownies or cookies or any of that stuff. But someone went and got a cake for me as a special thing. And I was like, oh, I don't eat cake. And it was the same deal with the cupcake. I should have just sucked it up. How many calories or sugar, you know, for that one little cake piece? Like, I was an asshole. That's what it comes down to. I didn't realize it and I didn't mean to be, but I was in my own world. I had my blinders on, like, no, this is how I think and I don't eat that. So thanks, but no thanks. Not stepping back and taking a broader view and seeing the thoughtfulness and the effort that someone else put in. And yeah, I'm in total agreement. So since then, I've been much better.
Hey guys, follow us on all social media platforms to include Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Facebook group. We have so much information going on every single day, and we don't want you to miss out on any of that stuff. So check it out. Go give us a follow. I think the next thing I have accepting is praise, because I'm just being me. I don't do this for praise. And the thing I probably have the least amount of difficulty accepting or receiving is love. I'm very open to receiving love and giving love back. So praise and love are different, just so we're clear. They could look alike, but they are very different.
Oh, absolutely.
So tell me about how you feel about those things that I just mentioned. Same?
Well, I already talked about the cake, but I can also talk about there was a time where I felt undeserving. And I was in an airport eating. I was in the military. And, you know, they found out I was in the military and they paid for my meal. And I felt horrible about that. I'm like, no, I chose to join the military. Like, I'm not doing this for the freebies and whatnot. And later on, I shared with some other military people after my flight, like, you know, I was at this airport and they paid for my meal and I kind of felt like shit and whatnot. And I got some humble pie given to me. And it was, hey, you need to accept that. And if you have a problem with it, how about you accept it for the guys that can't, the guys that didn't make it back? They are trying to honor them because they know you also wrote a check that could be cashed at the cost of your life. So don't be that guy and be, oh, I feel like this. Accept it for your brothers and sisters that didn't make it back, or accept it for the people that can't. And that just was a game changer for me. And I've now become more open to receiving and understanding that. And then I try and honor that. That's one of the big things that I do with my life right now. I mean, I have four buddies that are tattooed on my arm here that didn't make it back. Dave Nunez, Josh Whitaker, Art Lilly, and Jeff Kettle. And I don't know if you can see, but I get some goosebumps talking about them. And I'm not looking for attention, but my point of this is you carry on for those that you care about and honor them in your life. So find something that fuels you to make the world a better place or to be a better human. That's why I still try and take care of myself and be a positive person. And especially even coming to my family, my kids, I want to be as healthy and around to help them, to aid them, to be there for their questions and answers or support them as long as I possibly can. I know I'm not going to be able to be here forever, but I want to do the best I can. And when you do the best you can, you'll be pleasantly surprised at how far you can go sometimes and the difference that it makes.
So what I'm hearing is the answer is thank you so much.
Yes, thank you so much. And thank you for having me on here. Like being able to share this with you, Dennis, right now. And like we're both giving, like nobody's like, hey, look how great I am. And oh, I did this and I ran these missions or whatnot, or I was part of this unit. Like it's genuinely, we're both talking about how to be the best human being you can and to help others be the best human being they can so that we can make this fucking world a better place. Like we all live here. Let's figure it out. Like quit the bullshit and the dumb stuff and let's focus on the real problems, which the biggest one is how to be a good person and how to be good to others.
Also, when I said thank you so much, that was advice that I think I'm giving to everybody about when you receive something, instead of saying, I don't need it, I don't want it, just accepting it. So that's the answer. And, you know, we get it a lot. I get it a lot. And I got to tell you, I don't ever take it for granted. Every single person that stops and says something nice to me about the work that I do and what it means to them, it's always, thank you so much. And thank you for so much support. Like you guys understand, like this would not be going the route it's going without you guys. And so like, I'm glad that you found value, but I'm just so much more thankful that you're still doing the job. I'm just the guy who's your coach now, trying to make sure that you do this job well. So believe me, don't think for a second I take for granted what you guys are still out there doing. And it's amazing to me that you're still in the face of what is extreme police prosecution at times over nothing. You still show up knowing that that's even a risk. I think that's more of a scary thing than actually getting shot, to be quite honest with you. The cops are more scared about getting in trouble than actually getting shot, as nuts as that fucking sounds.
No, that makes sense. And I'm friends with police officers and law enforcement, and they absolutely share that with me. They're afraid of making a mistake. They're hesitant, which to me sucks, because you can't do your job if you're hesitant, worrying about what's going to happen and what repercussions are going to be. And I want to go back to the thank you so much as well. Another great response that I've discovered and I'd like to share with people, because I get the thank you for your service. Thank you for your service. And instead of just being like, you're welcome, I'm now, and I totally believe this. And I think most people that have served with, you know, the righteous intent, it was an honor. That's what I tell people all the time. Like, it was an honor to do it. Like, I met some of the most amazing people. I served with men that, like, I can't even believe that I call them my peers. There's a book, Walking Among Giants. Like, that's how I feel. Like, I got buddies that have just blown me away on how they live their life, the missions they've run, things they've done. Like, I was a cool guy for a while, but I didn't retire from the military. You know, I still got to work and do the training and help others. And there was a lot of gratitude there and fulfillment in what I was doing and kind of passing the torch and still kind of being in the fight, but being able to be with my family. So it was a win-win. But there's amazing people out there, and it absolutely was an honor. And I'm sure you feel that way with the police force. And when you serve, like, it's an honor to be with people like that. Selfless service, and that are really willing to risk their life to try and make the world a better place. I think people forget that all the time.
Besides a tattoo on your arm, and I'm not downplaying the significance of that tattoo, how do you remember and honor your friends that you lost?
I just think, like, I get down and it saddens me. And most of them have had kids. One of my good buddies, Josh Whitaker, he was younger. But anytime I feel like shit, I kind of just go to them and what they would tell me to do, and like, quit being a pussy and suck it up, or embrace the suck. And you know what? I didn't fucking sacrifice my life so you could go back home and be like whiny or complain or sit on the couch. Like, they motivate me so much. And when I think about them and what they did and who they were as people and how they passed, like, that, it's, I mean, it's life-changing for me. It's something that, it's a foundation, and it cuts me to the core in a negative way that they're gone. But boy, it fuels me to be a better person. It fuels me to share their names. It fuels me to be a better dad, because I know kids that don't have a dad now, you know? So it's, when I think about them, I get down, but then I get fired up, I guess is the best way to answer that question. They motivate me to be better and fired up in life to change the world and enjoy all the freedoms that we have here.
Would you do us the honor of telling us about them one by one, who they were?
I'll start at the top, I guess, with Dave Nunez. Dave Nunez, he was my squad leader for the 18 Charlie phase, or the engineer phase of being a Green Beret. Super good buddy of mine. We hung out, multiple deployments, super good guy. We used to have fun. I mean, I went over his house in North Carolina, and, you know, I was an engineer. He was too, but I came from a construction background, like I said, blue collar, and he wanted to put a new deck on his house. And he had these wooden steps, and his son DJ came over, and he's like, what are you doing? And this is, I think, the first time DJ had met me. And I have a sledgehammer, and I'm beating these steps off the house. And I'm like, oh, I'm just wrecking your house. No big deal. And he's like, dad, you know, being a sarcastic wise ass. And he comes back. He's like, no, he's not doing that. He's just teasing you. We're building the new deck. And then he ended up, you know, helping us and giving us boards and whatnot. Then going down the list is Josh Whitaker next. Josh,
let me just stop for a second there. I just want to, because I don't want to breeze past Dave. Tell us who Dave was as a human being.
Dave was a happy-go-lucky, smiles, have fun, hard worker, enjoy life, give you the shirt off his back, be there right next to you, help you do it. They're all these guys are. That's what makes them so special. And that's why I say it's such an honor. Like, any one of the guys I think of that I know that have lost, I mean, I've lost, and that they're amazing human beings. I mean, like, so amazing. I can't describe, words cannot put into the type of people they are. I mean, they're human beings. They make mistakes. Nobody's perfect. But their goals, their missions, their purpose in life was so much greater than themselves. And they were willing to give so much always. And they were always 110%. If it was, you know, going out to have fun, whether it was going to the range and shoot, whether it was jumping out of a plane, it was 100%. And that's the fuel that, I mean, I know I keep going back to that, but literally when I think about them, it just, it makes me want to be a better human being because they were such amazing human beings, truly amazing human beings, mentally, physically, with their heart. Like, it's just impressive.
How did Dave get killed?
Dave was in an ambush and they brought a jingle truck. For those who don't know what a jingle truck is, they blocked the road with, like, it would be like a Mack truck or a box truck or something like that. And it was an ambush and RPGs, and he ended up burning in the vehicle, and then they had to recover him later. So yes.
He didn't deserve that.
He was a tough one. No, he didn't deserve that at all. None of them deserved what they did. And some of them, because I wasn't with every incident that went down, because some of the people were in my, they were all in my unit, but we had, you know, there's a team, there's an ODA, or, like, you know, different squads or whatever you want to do it, but we're teams. And sometimes teams go out on their own mission. Sometimes we do split team ops. Sometimes, you know, a company is going to have multiple teams. They're in different AOs or areas of operation in the country. So I wasn't there when, you know, certain things happen. And the sad part, and this is, we're still on Dave here, that Dave and I were in different companies once we got to group. So we were both in 7th Special Forces Group. But he was getting ready to go back and do another mission. And we were at the PX, or the exchange, where you know, it's like a Walmart. And we talked about getting a beer before he leaves. And we're like, oh, yeah, we got to get together, have a beer one more time before you leave with your team. And we were very nonchalant about it. He'd been deployed multiple times, you know, and people come and go. And we never got to have that beer. And it really bothered me that I didn't, like, pick up the phone and call him. And it wasn't even, I think it was like 2 weeks. So he had a week to deploy. The week was busy. He's doing stuff, getting ready to go. I'm busy doing stuff with my team and whatnot. And we just never got together for the beer. And then the following week, I found out he died, like, it was pretty much as soon as he got in country. And he'd been, you know, he's a combat vet, been there multiple times, and you never know when your time's up. It wasn't that he wasn't a good soldier. It's just, you know, wrong place, wrong time. And it's sad, but that's what happened. That's fate.
And how did you feel when you received that call?
Oh, I felt horrible. I mean, like, guilt, like, even that's why I'm talking about it now. I feel bad.
How'd that go down? Like, tell me, how does something like that, how do you learn about something like that? Who called you? How did you learn about it?
A fellow Green Beret called me and was like, did you hear about Dave? And I'm like, no, what happened? And he told me, and Dave just got killed, blah, 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 blah. And at that point, I didn't know all the details. It was later on that I got to actually talk to someone on Dave's team. And that's why I know the intimacies of Dave's demise and how he went. I'd like to think it was quick, you know, because of the RPGs, and maybe, you know, the explosion was just like a quick bang and it was done, but I don't know. And either way, it's just, for people to lose such a great human being in the world, it's just, it's horrible. But then again, it's life. Like, we have to accept we're all going to die, you know? So I try not to dwell on it too much, because then I'd just be miserable and depressed. So I try and, you know, turn the page in my mind, or, like, I talk about my book being a page master. Like, I flip the page to, what would he want? What would he like for me to do in the world or carry on? And those are the things that I focus on more. You know, trust me, I wrote The Asset Mindset, but I still struggle with staying positive sometimes. We're human beings. We're going to have bad things happen. We're going to have negative thoughts. We're going to have anxiety or depression or whatever it is. But you don't have to hold on to those emotions. You can let those emotions pass through you, and you can get your mind right and start focusing on the greater good. Because who wants to keep running those bad thoughts through your head over and over again? Like, move on.
Do you think you've properly processed a lot of the trauma that you've endured? or do you think you're trying to deflect and hide from it?
I think I've done a pretty good job at processing it. The reason being is I knew what I was getting into. So like when I got out of the military and I left 7th Special Forces Group, I had a sergeant major, awesome legend in our community, Bobby Cinco. If you ever hear this, Bobby, I love you, brother. And I don't mean that lightly, like you were saying, Dennis, you great guy. But he was like, you signed up at a time of war. You went to war. Don't ever feel bad about your service. I know people that went to the Sergeant Major Academy and became Sergeant Majors and they've never even been to combat. You don't ever feel bad about your service just because you didn't do 20. And that really humbled me. But going back to what you're saying, as far as how I processed it, that I knew when I was going in, I knew what I was getting into. I didn't like know because I hadn't done it, but I knew the repercussions. Like I may not come home. I may lose people. And I also came in a lot older. I turned 28 years old in basic training.
Oh, wow.
So I'm older than like one of my drill sergeants. Yeah, when 9/11 happened, like that wasn't on my radar. I was never like, oh, I'm going to join the military. Like I had a four-year degree. I had my real estate license. My father had an unrestricted builder's license. Like we were going to build houses, do subdivisions, real estate. And that was my path. And 9/11 changed that. And it changed things for my family too, which, you know, everything happens for a reason, I believe. And my dad is absolutely proud of me. And so is my mom. But there was a time where there was almost a feeling of abandonment where I'm like, hey, I'm going to do this now. I was like, I can't not do this. Like I'm being called. And I had that time, I had no kids. I wasn't married. And I'm watching on, you know, CNN or whatever news, like parents saying goodbye to their children and soldiers hugging their children as they're going off to war. I'm like, I should be going before them or I should be with them. And that's when that career path changed in my life.
It's a reoccurring theme with most people we have on the podcast. We had Casey Hildreth on yesterday. He was same exact. He's at 18, Charlie, like you. Green Beret Special Forces, the whole nine. Same exact, oddly enough, because I just 24 hours ago, I was talking to him and same exact everything. And the overall theme, he's a little bit older. He's 46 now. How old are you?
I'm going to be 48 in two and a half weeks.
Right. So, you know, you look obviously significantly younger than 48, but same Thank thing. And I never forget, I've said, talked about this before. I was going into the police academy. October 9th, 2001 is when I started my first police academy. And I remember my father had a lot of his friends' kids who were enlisting immediately after 9/11. Like people don't realize that the enlistment offices were overwhelmed. They couldn't process human beings fast enough to get into the military. It was fucking nuts. And my dad, who was not somebody who was, you know, really a sentimental, just not a emotional guy, right? You know, he's not the guy to sit down and give you a good talk about wisdom. It's just like, you know, it's either this or that. What the fuck? Like, no, there's no fucking you know, just like, it was never, there's never wisdom given, right? Just never, you know, and to his detriment, he just didn't never had the perspective change in his life for whatever reason. But I never forget that was one time in my life where I've seen that man display emotion and say, hey, you're not thinking about enlisting, right? And I said, Dad, I'm like 3 weeks away from going to the police academy. You know, I mean, a lot of my friends went into that to become cops. You know, I graduated high school in 99, 01 happens, right? I was 17. And so I wasn't even 20 yet when 9/11 occurred. I was turning 20 that November. And, you know, so a lot of people were in the military, but nobody ever forecasted at that time they'd be going to war.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just told them, I was like, no, nah, I mean, I that's not what, then there was some guilt behind it a little bit, but I'm like, you know, for me, how I found comfort in that was like, we still need cops here. Right. I'm not saying that I didn't deserve to go over there. I deserve to stay here. Just, I was there already. I was 3 weeks away. Everything was done. I was just essentially just waiting for the academy to start. And that's kind of my story behind it. But just to give you some context, I can understand where your parents are coming from, because that is literally one of the only times I can remember my father ever actually like just calming down his fucking insanity and having a conversation with me about like, you know, I'll just never forget. He's like, you're not like thinking about joining the military, right? Or anything like that, enlisting. I said, nah. He goes, yeah, because a lot of my friends' kids are. And I don't know. You know, I don't know if it's such a smart thing. And My father was, like I said, not an emotional man. As a matter of fact, he fucked me up. He's dying right now, and he's not well at all. Alzheimer's, dementia, the whole nine. And so, like, last week, he just out of nowhere blurted out, "I love you." And I was like, holy fuck. Like, this dude's never said that to me my entire life. You know, I know that he loved me, just, you know, whatever he had going on himself, it just never allowed him to be that person. And I'll never know why. I only have speculation and guesses as to why he could not say those words. Probably more appropriate for a therapist to analyze why that would have occurred. I have therapy at 5:15 today, so maybe I'll bring that up to my therapist to get some closure on some of those questions.
Be grateful he said it, Dennis.
Oh, listen, dude.
And embrace it.
Fuck me up. Listen, I'm going to tell you this right now. I'm going to say it's a lot of people here. Everything that was friction between my father and I has gone out the window in the past, I would say, 6 weeks. I go in there as his son. Not his angry son. Not his frustrated son. Not this, not that. I go in there and see a human being who's departing and deserves comfort from his child. That's what I do.
Awesome.
And so God people will
doing that. And honestly, I'm so glad to hear that, because if you weren't that way, I promise you, you'd have guilt, or it would haunt
well,
you. So I've lost both my parents, so I get it. You know, my dad is gone. Someone joked with me recently, you know, you're now an orphan. You don't have parents. My mother, she had pancreatic cancer. She died in my arm. Like, literally, I was holding her and she was going through the episode and died in my arms.
Yeah.
At, like, 2:42 in the morning this year in May. So, but yeah, I'm so happy for you that you have that with your dad, and anything you can do and say and cherish these last moments, because, or however long it's going to be, I mean, take full advantage of them. Because there's times now, even like, I want to call my mom and be like, "Oh, hey, guess what happened with my book? Oh no, I can't." Or, "Oh, hey, my kids are now going to this school and they're all happy." And, you know, like, or just the, "Hey, I love you. And what's going on?" So
I applaud you for having the strength to be there with your mother, because I'm sure it wasn't easy, because we did something similar about a year and a half ago with a family member who died from pancreatic cancer as well. And so it was very difficult, yet very easy, in the sense of it was difficult to watch somebody die, but it was very easy to be a human being and be there for them when they were at the last moments of their life. And so a question that continues to arise, and I think people are frustrated with, is how come more people weren't there? And so that doesn't matter. It matters that you showed up. I have a brother who is not showing up. You know, and it's, and I'm not mad about it. Just a different person. And so it has nothing to do with what I'm going to do and how I'm going to show up. And some of the most beautiful things I've seen thus far is how, even as my father lies, and surprisingly, he, like, you come in and sometimes you're like, fuck, he's like better than he was like a week ago. How the fuck did this happen? Like,
yeah, I used good to days see and bad day. Days, they're real. I never understood that either. It's like, if someone's sucking, you expect them to stay sucking or not understand.
Yeah, dude. Sometimes I come in, he's like sitting up. Yeah. I'm like, what the fuck is going? Like, I would have thought that this would be like, and I'm just fortunate enough that where he is literally right next to my kid's jujitsu place, and we go there 3 days a week. So on top of finding time, I'm at least there 3 days a week, you know, and I try to spend time, appropriate time. And sometimes with the kids, a little more short than the time I spend with him one-on-one. But, you know, that's the give and take, dude. And, you know, I don't have regrets, because I'm there when it was the most important. And I'm comfortable with that. And so, and my life is complicated like everybody else's, you know what I mean? Like, there are a lot of severed relationships in my family, but I'm still showing up and seeing people I don't want to see, but still showing up. That's it.
No, absolutely.
What else can you do?
Yeah, no, that's what you got to do. And it's taking the high road, or it's like,
think you about said, how your mother,
we're all people, and we need to understand everybody's on their own path of growth and maturity. You know, you can't walk a mile in someone else's shoes. You can try, but we all are on our journey. And we all need to figure it out for ourselves.
Think about the comfort you gave your mother knowing her son was there at that moment. No, probably one of the only people she wanted.
When I flew in, because we lived in different states, I had to fly up. You know, like I flew up one time when she was in the hospital for a while and I knew it was going to be bad. And when I left, she was really nervous that that would be the last time I'd ever see her. And when I came in the last few days, like when I walked in that room to where she lived, because I was able to get her home hospice and she was at home and I stayed with her at her home the last few days. And when I walked in, she just, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. She knew it was me, but she couldn't fully because she was under a lot of pain meds and
right,
whatnot.
Sure, dude.
But
sure.
She knew.
They can still hear you. They knew.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I hugged her. And one of her last like real sentences, she goes, Danny, I'm dying. And she told me that. And I'm like, I know, Mom, it's okay. I love you. I'm here, you know. And that was really the last sentence that she said to me. It was like she was letting me know that she was going. And it was that time because she was fighting. I mean, she was a fighter. I mean, to the very end, she was going out in a friend's convertible, driving around, like doing stuff that she wasn't really supposed to do, driving back and getting meds and then going back out. But she's like, I'm going to be outside and living as much as possible. She did that, but it got to the end, you know, where she is like everybody gets bedridden and couldn't go anywhere. But yeah, so I feel for you with your dad. And I'm so happy to hear, though, that he told you he loved you. Because when they're gone, like I said, both my parents are gone, that's something that you can hold on to and cherish for the rest of your life, knowing that that was said. Because one of the worst things is when there's a regret that you can't change. You can't go back in time. Time only goes one way. So you have that moment, you have those times that you right now can make and shape that you will carry with you the rest of your life. And all your listeners too, whatever it is in life, you are making your future right now. Don't have regrets. Whatever it is you're dealing with or struggling with, whether it is a loss or someone dying, or if it's a job or not applying for something or doing whatever it is, you know, don't have regrets in life. Go make shit happen.
Yeah, I share these things to help other people because I can't be the only person in these shoes. And if you think you're not in my shoes now, there'll become a time a lot in your life where you'll be in my shoes in a situation like this. And so I want to give you guidance to make sure that you don't have regret and you show up for those who really want you to show up.
Hey guys, if you're enjoying the Street Cop Podcast, do us a favor and give us a review on iTunes or Spotify, wherever you're listening to us. Tell a friend. We don't charge anything for the episodes. We appreciate your support. Check us out on any social platform by putting into the search bar Street Cop Training. Give us a follow. We have a lot of free content coming out every single day that you might not catch here on the podcast. And it's important for you to be able to do your job more professionally. And we also entertain you as well.
And we started with Dave. Can we go through the rest of them?
Yeah, yeah. I'll go into Josh Whitaker was next. Josh was a young guy from Long Beach, California. He was just well beyond his years. And one of the things that really hits me with him is that we were hanging out and I brought him with me to see some buddies. We went down to Florida on a, you know, pass and leave. And we're drinking some beers and talking out by this pool. And he was like, I'd die for you. I'd die for blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, hey, man, yeah, we get it. Don't talk like that. And no shit. That's what he did in Afghanistan. He died protecting his team and staying up there and putting rounds down range and fighting to keep everybody else alive. That's what he did. And he didn't have any kids. He was a young guy. I believe he was like 24 years old when he passed. And he was just taken too young. But I think he was wise beyond his years and he had life figured out. And God was like, no, you got it, dude. You're good. You can come home. And that's, I guess, how I processed that one. And next is Art Lilly. Art Lilly, he was almost my team sergeant. Really, really close. I got to B-27, which was the company and unit I was with. And they sent me down to his team room and they're like, hey, go in here and talk to the team sergeant, probably going to the mountain team. And I was like, okay, Roger that, sergeant. So I go down there and he's kind of interviewing me. He's talking to me, liked me a little bit, but he's like, sorry, man, you're not going to cut it on this team. I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, you're too damn big. I'm not going to have to help repel you and do this or be in the mountains. And you get, because I'm 6'4". And at that time I was like 250. He's like, wow. Yeah, we don't need that big of a dude stuck on the side of a mountain. Like he goes, I got nothing against you, but you're going to have to go find another team. So I was like, okay. And then I get to the other team, and later on we're in the company area and I'm new guy, you know, and I'm trying to learn. And one of the things I was taught at a young age is you find mentors. Well, I was getting mentored by his engineer on his team. And I go in there and he's like, hey, you want a beer? Because it's after work hours. And he's explaining some things to me. Well, who comes in is Art Lilly. And he's like, what the fuck, Cherry? You're in my team room drinking my beer now? And I'm like, And it's just him razzing me. And it was, he really wasn't that pissed, but he's busting my balls. Like, who do you think you are? You know, he thought I kind of just came in and was hanging out. And I'm like, no, I'm not. And he's like, all right, well, you don't drink any more of my beer though. Art, he was shot and killed in RC East in Afghanistan. And there's some, I kind of know the story, but at the same time, you know, I've talked to the guys that were there. So I pretty much know what happened, but it's something I can't fully talk about. I mean, what went down and the way it went down, because it just
understand.
Operations. Yeah. So then there's Jeff Kettle. He was a great guy. We actually have some mutual friends that didn't know, like a different group. So now being in Nashville, I'm close to fifth group. And I met a fifth group guy who happened to serve with Jeff Kettle, and he saw the tattoo on my arm and he was just like, what the fuck? You knew Jeff Kettle? And I'm like, yeah, he mentored me in small unit tactics. And, you know, he was in seventh group with me. And he was like, that dude is awesome, dude. Now I'm friends with this guy, Andy. And we're super close. It's just bonded through Jeff and, you know, the regiment and whatnot. But Jeff had kids. And he was another one that he just was always working and trying to help everybody be better. Like, he was giving. He would take extra time and be like, hey, no, you need to do this. Or if you're going to move in different tactics, because I came off the street to be a Green Beret. And that's not an easy thing to do. I mean, I had the construction stuff down for the Charlie job and being an engineer and building things and electricity and wiring stuff. I didn't know explosives, but the small unit tactics and patrolling and, you know, how to set up ambushes and whatnot. And he was somebody that helped me with that, taught me. And he was willing to stay extra hours. Like, training would, you know, go all hours, but there were times where there was downtime and you can go back to the barracks, wash your clothes, do laundry, but he was always that guy that was willing to give extra. So yeah, they're great, great men. And I hope I can continue to honor them and what they fought for and what they sacrificed for, so that, you know, they're definitely not forgotten, but they're in a way still contributing to making the world a better place, because they still help me be better.
Where did you think this conversation was going to go today?
Not there. I wasn't expecting to talk about them. But I understand, like you said in the beginning, it's good to just have conversations and you capture the moment as it is. If it's too pre-planned and staged, then it's not genuine. And things that are genuine are always more powerful. And I think that's why my book's done well, because I'm very genuine in it. And it's been powerful for people. And I didn't set out to be a writer. You know, that's not my job. I make jokes. I can't even type with all my fingers. You know, I use a few fingers on each hand and my thumb, you know, and that wasn't my goal. My goal was to just share, and people kind of planted seeds in my head like, hey, you had an amazing life. You should write a story about it. Well, in writing stories, I then found morals of the stories. And like I said, I wanted to help people correct their thinking in a more positive way and have an asset mindset philosophy to get through the world. And I see it's changing people, and it's a powerful thing.
Tell us about the book.
So the book is a way to look at life and approach life. So it's a philosophy or a technique. It is something that if you apply this to your life, I can promise it will make changes in a positive way. I don't know how many changes, and I'm not saying you're going to get all your goals, but you will have success and you will do things that you maybe didn't have on your radar. I never expected to be friends with a rock star and driving around in a $450,000 Rolls Royce at times and doing this and doing that and going places. But if you have the right mindset and you surround yourself with good people, and that's what my book is teaching people to do these things so that you can have these amazing experiences. I fly around in a private jet all the time. I never even imagined it. So many people have never done that. I go to backstage concerts. I meet celebrities. Hell, I had Cindy Crawford kiss me one time. If I was a kid, you know, or a teenager, and you're like, not a kiss. So let me get that straight.
Okay, I got you.
It's been bad. But like, you know, I was helping her out.
And she's still a smoke show, right?
But she like, I brought him to the airport from the plane, helped him get in the car, and she gave me a hug. And she's like, thanks, Dan, and just gave me a kiss on the cheek. And, you know, it was nothing bad, but it was one of those things where it was just, that actually happened to me. Like, I never would have believed that, you know, 20 years ago and been like, hey, I bet you $1 million that Cindy Crawford will kiss you on the cheek. I'd be like, yeah, right. That's never happening. You know, it's those type of things that can happen to you when you have this type of mindset and philosophy and approach life with the asset mindset. And I'm just trying to share that with people.
What a cool story, dude. This has been a beautiful conversation today. It's been awesome, dude. And, you know, I hope we could do this again, because I think that we have a lot of stuff to continue talking about. And once we get off of this, I'll make sure you have my cell phone number and anything we can do for you here. Where can they buy the book? Where can they find you?
You can go to theassetmindset.com and go to books. And in there, there's a click here link, and that'll take you to wherever you want to go and buy. It brings you to Simon Schuster's website, where you can go to Amazon. You can go to Barnes & Noble, Books a Million. Or if you just want a shortcut, it's bit.ly/theassetmindset. That's simple. So bit.ly/theassetmindset.
Awesome, dude. Instagram, any social media platforms?
Yep. Instagram, The Asset Mindset. You can look me up. I'm there. I do have a Facebook page too. Primarily, I use Instagram because I'm really busy and doing a lot of different things. I can't run a lot of social media, but Instagram is the best.
It's been great, dude. What a great episode.
Well, thank you, Dennis. Thanks for your time. It was great getting to know you and getting to hang out and talk some shit.
Yeah, it's good stuff, bro. Thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for having me.
Hey guys, check out our upcoming training at StreetCop.com. Don't forget, we have 50 instructors nationally teaching a variety of topics. These are the best classes you're going to experience in your career. We make sure of it. You're going to love it. I guarantee you, you're going to be thankful that you went. Check us out at StreetCop.com for all upcoming classes in your area.